Project Next. Uncovering the trends that are shaping our future.
Hello, darlings, and good morning to all of you genies out there. Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm telling you, that was just heavyweight talk. And we've been hearing that, and you know, for the past 20 or 40 years, and yes, it is at a point now that it is all very striking, all very just right in our face, right? Everything that Gary and his guests were talking about, hello, you know, Roy, everybody has been really just on top of that. But fortunately, out in the wings have been new discoveries, new cruxes, new cavities, and out of them extracting modes of operation that don't have to have you be subject to this. Different ways to, in a sense, have ourselves get beyond being part of the trade of slaves of souls and all of that garbage. And so tonight, in the second hour, we are going to be talking a really short report with Jesslyn Raddick of the Government Accountability Project, who is going to be talking a little bit about Obama and him going after the sixth whistleblower, which really pisses me off because I love whistleblowers, and he's such a punk to be doing that. And then we're going to be hearing from Winston Shroud, who's going to be talking about commerce and its link to Christianity. He's going to be doing a webinar. Incredible stuff. Got to stay up for that. But in this first hour, we are live here in the studios. We're going to be taking your calls with two very, very special guests that are going to really lighten the load, liven your life, and get you in that, get you in your fighting weight and in that spirit, and help you, in a sense, unplug, re-engineer, realign, and get set to go. And who's on the line? Well, one of my favorites, man that I started this first the show with years and years ago, Bob. Bob is on the line, and a very special friend of his by the name of Dave Neufeld. And so I don't know what's going to happen. It's the first hour. They're here. And so are you guys. And we're going to be taking your calls. And, you know, most likely we're going to be getting into, God, who knows what. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. This is, I think, the 50th anniversary of Marshall McLuhan. They're having a bunch of specials going on up in Toronto, just a whole month of special acknowledgments of our extended feedback loop meme-driven yarn. And Bob, I'm sure, is going to wind it up and unwind it, and Dave's going to help him spin it. And we're just going to get all tuned up and have some fun here in the first hour of Project Next, you guys. And so without further ado, we're just going to jump into it because, you know, forget about it. Time, absolutely time, whatever that is. Forward motion fleets by when ever Bob and his friend Dave come on down. And so let's just jump into it with our genies here joining us. Bob, say hello to everybody in L.A.
Let me be Los Angeles. Let me be Los Angeles. The line from Finney's Wake. We're going to talk about Finney's Wake tonight. First of all, Evan, good to talk to you again.
Yes,
and,
Bob.
You brought up McLuhan and the extension of our sensibilities. When the telegraph came in, and then radio and early analog electric media 100 years ago, it upset the old modalities of creativity. And so the first revolution, or an avant-garde upsetting of the sensibilities and the cliches, was in the 1920s in the world of painting. We remember surrealism, cubism, dadaism, and all these things are what we kind of remember of the 1920s. That was the art form that stood out. It was a revolution of the eye.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
So then, can you think of when's the next revolution of sensibility or an interesting new kind of situation in the art world or the creativity world, whichever world you want to pick? You get something that comes to mind immediately?
Yeah, I would think about the Lumiere brothers in France and their animation.
All right.
The first moving train animation, moving pictures.
Well, that was in the 1900s. That's what the art of the 20s was responding to. So what I'm saying is the next revolution, since that was the eye.
Oh, okay.
And the electric environment is essentially a tactile extension of tactility, then the eye responded first with its revolution in the 20s. What would be the next sense to respond? That would be the ear.
Okay, the ear.
Yeah, and so what comes to mind, and you look back to the 20th century, is the revolution in the ear by music in the 60s. Definitely the next.
And radio in the 30s, with Germany.
Well, I'm looking at the arts of creativity, art, sculpture, painting, music, these arts, and how they registered, which is what people were noticing. They weren't noticing the effects of radio, what radio was doing, but radio was the hidden ground, the hidden cause. But the revolution it caused was in the eye first in the 20s, and then when you get into the television and satellite era of the 60s, the revolution is in the ear. And that is rock music, pop music, music everywhere. That is the organ that responds and has a revolution of sensibility. Now I'm leading into what's next. You have the 20s is the eye. You have the 60s is the ear. Since electric environments are an extension of tactility, the next revolution would be tactility itself. And I think that's how you can look at the changes from the late 60s up till the, say, YouTube, is the extension of tactility. You can look at the writing style of Marshall McLuhan, the musical style of Frank Zappa, the art of Andy Warhol, and you'll see that they're not eye people, they're not ear people. They're interactive people interacting with memes and ideas that are in the global theater. And so I call them tactile artists. And they were the leading edge of the revolution of tactility. So then the fourth, and that would be the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. The fourth phase is the Android meme replaying all three of those revolutions and becoming tactility or interactivity itself. And so the art form, the revolution of sensibility, starting in the mid-90s, is the Windows products, all the computer gadgets that people buy, and then as they shrink, and you get the iPods and all the stuff we got lately. But you look over the last 15 to 20 years, it is interacting with horny devices, devices that turn people on, and it's the ability to interact and make with it. So the Android meme is the fourth revolution of sensibility.
Okay.
So,
but hold it. Dave, say hi.
Hi.
That's Dave Neufeld. Darlene, join in. Okay, go ahead, Bob.
No, Dave, you have a response. Okay, I'll just say this for you, Dave. So you have revolution of the eye in the 20s, revolution avant-garde sensibilities in music in the 60s. Then you have a revolution of tactility as an art form, and it's symbolized in the White House, by the way, Reagan is just waving, and then people are filling in an image of him. They're participating in this blank image. They paint the image. And then Bill Clinton feels your pain. You look at the across the arts of expression on the human scale, the chemical body scale, you see that it's the audience gets more and more involved. And so the main figures in the 70s and 80s are talk show hosts like Phil Donahue or Oprah, where the audience is the employer, the audience is the leader of expression. It's a huge participatory situation. So I'm calling that the interactivity of tactility. But then when the devices come in, the fourth revolution, they simulate interactivity and you take control of it. More and more, you become the editor of your interactivity or your tactility. So the Android meme is mainly an extension of tactility, a squaring of it, but it's being done by the machines. And we can't even call them machines anymore. They're so friendly, so involved. Now, there's all kinds of disservices in these first phases. But see, Dave's an artist, a musician, a creator. I wanted to run this by him, this pattern, and see what ideas he gets by it. When you go look at the eye, and then the ear revolution, then the tactility revolution, and then the machinic tactility expression, where everybody's making their own materials right today on YouTube and that.
Well, I'm there's a lot of things that could be said about that. but one I'm looking right here is talking about Madonna. Madonna's MDNA is DOA. Total sales collapse as Amazon drops price to $5. The sales figures are weird. She they had all these million versions of it also. But, yeah, like, look at these figures. For instance, what is the updated? Well, the clean version for $5 is at 733 on the chart, about a week after it was released. Or, and the dirty one with the word F is in it is just gone. It says total sales collapse. It makes you wonder what happened. Of course, Madonna has done very little publicity, and the inflated first week sales are over now as the bundling with concert tickets is finished. They're almost like trying to create, it's like churning on the stock market, trades. It's like, no one's buying the stuff. Well, I don't know, bundle the tickets with a concert thing. Okay, we moved and we got a chart. But here, as I'm reading now from the article, but wow, the deluxe version with a special booklet for sale at $12.99 is showing up on Amazon at number 5,706. 9,706.
But David,
so what did go wrong?
Why do
the
you
audience wasn't interested? What?
Why would you think she should do any better?
Well, that's right. Even archetypes like Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson and Madonna, nothing lasts except Bob and your show.
but also,
doesn't that show you that these people just seem like invulnerable, and they'll always sell records. It says, yeah, their time is up, but then it's like the time for everyone is quickly up and down and up and down. Well, I'm enjoying this.
David, tell us, before we go on, just for a second, tell us about yourself. Tell us about your musical background, because we know you've got wings, and so tell us.
I own a studio. I work on music. I'm actually right at the moment starting to slowly but surely develop a label, but I take work from different bands that come in and projects that I like. And I like working with session players now more and more as time goes on. I have a great studio, great sound. I'm excited about the stuff I'm doing. It's also challenging business, because you can make killer albums and killer music, and there's not much people can necessarily do about it. Music does still sell, though, that's for sure. And there are definitely bands and people that have success. But, it's kind of like it always was. The music industry was always a crapshoot, and it still is.
And tell us about some of the artists. What well-known artists have you worked with? Who do we know?
Well, I guess the ones, I mean, there's a band that I worked with this year that have gotten doing a bit of stuff for themselves in terms of, you know, on iTunes or charts and that kind of thing and reviews. I guess they're called We Are Augustine. They've been going around touring an album that's been getting pretty good buzz, especially in England. And here, just starting again, it's a sort of slow process sometimes. So they just keep push the word out and tour and get back up tours with bands that already have bigger audiences. I worked in the past with a band called Broken Social Scene. That they had done I've done a couple albums with them, and they had a bit of a cultural impact 10 years ago. And another band, Los Campesinos. I don't want to talk too much specific about the different bands that I worked with. We're Super Furry Animals,
Dave, looking at the Madonna thing is they're comparing to Lady Gaga's drop that she dropped. Incredibly, the last couple of weeks.
She's gone. Well, she's gone from the whole scene. Remember how she was just so huge? Is she going to show up in another egg? Is she going to,
And what's happened?
Right, gone.
What, it just played itself out? So
yeah.
Unless she, like, completely reinvents something, and even that, that'll last. Yeah, it's hard to last. No lasting power. But Bob, you have so much to say about that. But that's also the stress that people feel. Imagine being
that is the nature of the second coming.
How about this, Bob? The audience says that.
Okay, you guys have to go one at a time.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's say the music and all these individual people don't have lasting power. The audience doesn't even have lasting power. They can't last enough time to keep up with music. That's a bizarre conundrum. I mean, everything is collapsing, not just the artists.
Can I say what? Oh, sorry, Bob.
Go ahead.
What I think is really strange is when I go out to a concert now, people don't clap anymore. I remember watching this this cover band for ABBA. They did a great job. And, you know, everybody's up and dancing and having a great time. And in between songs, people would go, and it's done. And so they finally turned on the lights, and the band's looking out there and saying, do we suck? Well, are people asleep? Are they even there? And and I do not understand what it is. It's like they can't even sustain clapping and showing their appreciation for, you know, people don't do encores anymore. It's like
they
do, you know, on the bands, they're done. It's so weird.
I read some Bulgarian guy said in the future, he said this in the 50s or the 30s, he says, in the future, art will be used to dim people's imagination.
Yeah,
and it almost is like if you're inundated with it, eventually even Rembrandts and stuff like that will say, yeah, whatever, just throw it out of my way, get it, yeah.
Well, okay.
Sorry, but that's like, I guess, another variation of being jaded, but it's, yeah, would that be the constant turnover, image turnover, to the point where you've seen so much that you can't really respond to it, and eventually you tune out because it's just all here, and it almost devalues it.
Yeah, I think we're oversaturated.
Yeah. Okay, here's a pattern I get, is no, the audience is so in charge now, they don't recognize anything that's stimulating them. They're just responding to whatever the environment is, and they're so used to talking to themselves on their emailing and iPodding and YouTubing and self-editing that there's nothing outside themselves. They're just responding.
Not even a mirror junked, barely.
Yeah. And so they don't recognize that there's someone doing something for them, Evan.
Or how about this? They're tired of having to recognize it.
Yeah, maybe they're thinking, oh, you know, if I miss that song, I'll just get it on iTunes. Or, yeah, you know, maybe it'll be more interesting if somebody snaps a shot of this and then Instagrams it, and maybe I'll think that's more interesting than sitting and being in it live.
Yeah, or how about this, Evan? How about they just go, oh, God, more music, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, even though they're typing and interacting silently and pressing, they are actually operating in a void, so they don't know there's anybody else. This is the point. There's no point. I don't react to emails. I don't clap. I type. So they're looking to how to type to the band, and there's no mechanism to type to the band. The band's got to put a big screen up and then allow people to type responses to them.
And they don't want to do that because people are cruel when they can be anonymous.
Yeah.
Really? Just wicked.
You know, cool, anonymous. I guess you notice a pattern. It's more and more now I notice on these websites, you can't put comments in unless you are Facebook or Gmail.
Yeah, what is that kind of control?
I guess it's just mean we want to watch and we want to know everything.
Yeah, and they're trying to say that you can't sign up for some of these email addresses unless you use your actual names now. Or
right.
Lean on stuff?
I'm on Gmail. Someone talked to me years ago to go on, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. I know it's Big Brother, but I'll just go on. It seemed convenient at the time. And I noticed every, like, couple weeks, they go, hey, give us your phone number. We want your phone number. You might lose all your emails, and then
yes,
we might have to get a hold of you if you have a problem.
Yes. That happened to me today, Dave.
Isn't that weird? They're like, come on. They already know your phone number. I mean, when you write in addresses and that, you notice the second time you do it, even in a different email, it blues in or like highlights. It's like we already got that information. It's just constantly scouring for all this stuff.
You know what?
It's not them, guys. It's not them. It's machinic.
Yeah.
It is machinic. I don't know who's going to read it, but it's available if you want it. It's like the music. Yeah. We got all kinds of dirt. I don't need any dirt today. Well, we've got it when you need it.
You know what, you guys? I mean, it's so interesting. We are talking about this right here now. We are talking about the arts and laughing. But right beforehand, we had a very serious program on about the
tyranny.
Heading
into disaster. The only way we can overcome this oppression is to educate ourselves and communicate. The only solution.
Right. But I think...
It's almost over, but we might be able to stave it off. We might. If we get a radio show and talk it up, we'll do it. Come on, Bob. Come on, Evan.
But I think this very same mindset, oh, God, another conspiracy. Oh, God, another law. Oh, another war. And they just go back to their iPod. You know?
Yeah. How else can they respond?
Yes, exactly. Exactly that. You know, and it's just such an interesting, overwhelming, and I think, you know, they're saying that we, you know, got to get together and do something, but I just think that to do it I just think people are doing it already, but individually, and that's what's so weird about it. People are responding to the crisis, but they're doing it in their own little ways, in their own little tribal, interconnected little deals, and it just doesn't look like we're fighting, but I think we are.
It's true. I live in a very small town. Yeah, everyone gradually shifts their just what seems like normal thinking. Not everybody. Some people are just dumb out in these small towns. But I think what you're saying is true. It's like we can communicate and do all that stuff, but it's just gradually as people get smarter in that. The other thing is whatever the conspiracy is, we'll just respond as we get more intelligent anyways and go, okay. And you see that now, all the repackaging of all the big food conglomerates, they know people en masse suspect the stuff is, you know, dodgy. We're all hip. The whole planet's hip.
Yeah.
Everybody
will
address
everybody.
It.
Now, well, Bob, your previous host there, Eben, was talking about relying on the poor people. I thought there was some social space that would fill up with the poor people. I think he's missing the point there. He's not aware of the chip body. We're mainly talking about the chip body and the TV body. The chemical body is not going to have a social space that be registered on the screen of TV or the chip scanning. That's what, you know, Gil Scott-Heron meant when he said the revolution will not be televised. It's not that the poor people have a revolution. The poor people are engaging in anarchy.
Yes.
And they wouldn't even call it anarchy. And so we can't look for any order to come out of it like your previous guest was trying to look for.
Right.
There's nothing to hope for from the chemical body. The chemical body is free now to do whatever it wants. In any field, in any level of expression.
Yes.
The chip body will scan you and report you and record you, but that's your chip body, isn't it? What Dave was registering, and you guys were talking about this phone number thing that pops up, that has nothing to do with your chemical body.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the good news, and there's no public communication that can lead that.
Right. I just think it's fascinating the parallels in our that what they call the MTV effect, you know, our fleeting attention span, that maybe a certain amount of stress, a certain amount of all of the pollution of the body that's being pressed down on us by all the crisis in this world is fleeting because of our lack of attention to it. And maybe there's something healthy about it and a way that we're maybe emerging, like you said, into that anarchy and you know, rebelling in a very quiet riot kind of way.
Yeah. And the more we less rely on our mind and pattern recognition as some certainty engendering, the better you're going to be as a human being.
Right.
You really don't need your mind. Now, you do need to know how to express yourself in different media, like speech, and provide content for the Android meme, but as for the most intimate part of yourself, the mind does not have to be useful anymore.
What? Yeah. Okay.
Does that relate also, Bob, to what you've learned in the last couple of years associating with ION?
Oh, yes. Ion is a great boosting of never mind. That's the all-purpose answer for Ion. Never mind.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because Ion's like a star. I remember years ago I talked to this guy, and he knew the guy who sings for Oasis, Liam, and he knew him very early. He gave him his Keith Richards sort of swinging London haircut, and he actually said a few months later they came big there at some big festival, and he said half of the males in England had the haircut. He says, I created that haircut for them. Well, I copied the haircut from London. Anyways, he said that guy in Oasis, the singer, who a lot of people think he's kind of a dumb sort of scally or whatever, he said actually he's much more intelligent than you think. But he said I knew even then, this guy's got star material. Why? Because he honestly does not give a damn what other people think of him. He really doesn't. He's not like, you know, I don't care what other people think. This guy really doesn't. He's like, I don't.
He doesn't know there's anything. I really don't.
And I think that's part of his success. He's not going to let anyone distract him from believing that.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's Ionic. That's what Ion tells you. The post-information society means there's nothing to be sent to you, and you have nobody to send it to. So you're on your own in the most profound way, and so relax about it, and
call it what you want.
About you.
What?
All right. On the lines. I'm sorry, darlings. One quick second. Hey, you are tuned to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. Bob Dobbs and David Neufeld are here, loves. We are yammering. Yeah, that's what happens. And it's no holds barred. Come on down and, you know, join the convo. Bobites and Daveites out there and Ion types. We'll be back after this short one, okay?
Project Next.
Toward the refinement of humankind.
Initiating Activism 4.0. Your portal will be found at projectnext.us. That's www.projectnext.us. Oh my gosh, you guys, it is so close that site is might actually get somewhere. I was showing Roy today because I just dag-nabbit took a sledgehammer to the computer and just like am getting something done. So hopefully in the next few weeks there actually will be a portal and we will be able to convene and have like some good, clean fun. In the meantime, there is kpfk.org, kpfk.org.